This is part two of Chris Watts. I suggest that you go back and listen to part one. If you're familiar with the story, then maybe you can just jump right in.
So you can give your first last name.
Chris Watts, W-A-T-T-S.
What's going on right now around your house?
Right now it's got K-9 units, the sheriff's department. Everybody's like they're doing their best right now to figure out like if they can get a scent, see where they went. If they went on foot, they went in a car, they went somewhere. And right now it's just like they've been on point. They're going through the house trying to get a scent, and hopefully they can pick something up to where it's going to lead to something.
What happened? Your wife came home. Tell me
what's she came home from the airport 2 a.m. and I left around 5:15. She was still here. And like about 12:10 in that afternoon, her friend Nicole showed up at the door. Like I had texted Shanann a few times that day, called her, say, you know, but she never got back to me, but she wasn't getting back to any of her people as well. And that's what really concerned a lot of people, is like, she's not getting back to her, like if she doesn't get back to me, that's fine. Like she gets busy during the day, but she didn't get back to her people, which was very concerning. And Nicole called me when she was at the door, and that's when I came home. And then walked in the house and nothing has vanished. Nothing was here. I mean, she wasn't here. The kids weren't here. Nope, nobody was here.
What's your wife's name?
Shanann. S-H-A-N-A-N-N.
What's your kids?
Bella and Celeste.
How do you spell Celeste?
C-E-L-E-S-T-E.
How old are
you? Bella's 4, Celeste is 3.
And so how many times did you try calling her?
I called her 3 times, texted her about 3 times, just to say, you know, what's going on. Like I did, because after I called her and texted her once, it was like maybe she was just busy. Like she had just gotten back, you know. Like everybody's probably calling her from her trip. She just got back from Arizona, and I figured she was just busy. But when her friend showed up, that's what it was like. It registered. Like, all right, this isn't right.
Do you think she just took off?
I mean, right now I don't even want to just like throw anything out there. Like I hope that she's somewhere safe right now and with the kids, but I mean, could she just taken off? I don't know. But if somebody has her and they're not safe, like I want them back now. Like that's what's in my head. Like if they're safe right now, they're gonna come back. But if they're not safe right now, that's the not knowing part. Like if they're not safe, last night I had every light in the house on. I was hoping that I would just get just ran over by the kids running in the door and just like barrel rushing me, but it didn't happen. And it was just a traumatic night trying to be here.
I'm gonna ask some kind of tough questions about your relationship with your kids.
My kids are my life. I mean, those smiles light up my life. And this, like, I mean, last night, like during, like, at, you know, when they usually eat dinner, it was just like I miss them. Like, I mean, I miss telling them, hey, you got to eat that or you're not going to get your dessert, you know, and just like you're not going to get your snack after. I miss that. Like, I miss them, you know, cuddle up on their couches. They have like a Minnie Mouse couch and a Sophia couch that they cuddle up on and watch, you know, Bubble Guppies or something. And it was just like, you know, it was tearing me apart last night, and I needed that. I needed that last night. And for nobody to be here last night and to go into their rooms and know that I wasn't going to turn the rain machines on, and I know that I wasn't going to turn their monitor on, and know I wasn't going to kiss them to bed tonight. It was, that's why last night was just horrible. I couldn't do it. I want everybody to just come home. Like, wherever they're at, come home. That's what I want.
Devil We Know contains graphic content and intense subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. Everywhere we look, everywhere we go, every city, every town, every neighborhood, every street, there is a devil we know. This is Devil We Know, and I am your host, Aaron. Chris and Shanann Watts were parents of 2 daughters, ages 3 and 4, and they were expecting a new addition to their family. At first, Chris had shown a significant desire to have another child, despite Shanann's initial refusal. and their discussion about the prospect eventually resulted in an affirmative decision to have another kid. Then, something strange happened once Shanann became pregnant. Chris was no longer excited. She had recorded herself telling him the news, and Shanann's friend Addie watched the video along with her husband on social media sometime later. They both commented on Chris looking less than thrilled about the pregnancy. When Chris started his love affair with Nikki Kessinger that same summer, he did not mention the pregnancy. And as Chris's relationship with Nikki grew, his relationship with Shanann suffered. He grew colder and more distant toward her. Eventually, he admitted to Shanann that he did not want the child she was carrying. During a visit to North Carolina to spend time with Shanann's family, Chris told Shanann that he did not feel like he was compatible with her anymore. Shanann asked if he would try counseling, which Chris openly refused after previously telling her that he'd help her work it out. Shanann shared this with close friends such as Addie, saying that, quote,
"He said he's not sitting on no damn couch saying what he said to me to no stranger,"
end quote. His demeanor with her was incredibly distant and unloving during the time he was with her in North Carolina. Even when Shanann reached out in a show of compassion, Chris failed to return it. She recounted how when she grabbed Chris's hand during an ultrasound, he did not hold hers back. To her, the old way of life was gone, and the relationship she knew with the man she loved was dead. Chris stayed in contact with Nikki during this trip, keeping her posted about his so-called attempts to fix his relationship with Shanann. He told Nikki that Shanann was not interested in trying, and that she still wanted to pursue a divorce. All the while, he agreed to go away the following weekend with Shanann in her last-ditch attempt to help with their relationship. Nikki, on the other hand, made plans with Chris to go apartment hunting that same week. Chris had told Nikki that once Shanann returned from town, the two of them would be putting the house on the market. On the night leading up to Shanann's arrival from Arizona, Chris had a phone call with Nikki, and Nikki remembers hearing TV during the late-night call. Nikki noted that Chris did not normally watch TV this late, and that there was no TV in the basement where Chris told her he stayed when Shanann was home. Nikki wondered upon realizing the strangeness of this activity whether Chris was staying awake to greet his wife on her return. Late the following day, Nikki received her answer, as she found out from Chris that his wife and kids were missing and that he was speaking with the authorities in order to find them. That day at the Watts residence, it became clear that something strange was afoot. Shanann's friends had attempted to reach her that morning, and when no response came, Nicole Atkinson, her coworker, came by to see if she was all right. With Shanann's troublesome health, her friend worried when she couldn't find a way into the house. Chris, who had been on site at one of the oil fields, left to respond when she then reached out to him. Police soon arrived, and Chris greeted them readily and allowed them full access to the house. The beds were unmade, a sheet clearly missing entirely from one of the rooms, and the police noticed Shanann's bag from her recent trip was still fully packed. Chris told the authorities that he woke Shanann at her behest and that they had one last discussion about their separation. He said there was no argument, but that they both were quite emotional, crying over the situation as they discussed their options. He shared that she then told him she'd be taking the kids to stay with a friend. He did not seem worried about their disappearance, assuring the police that she was likely to return with the kids soon enough. Many follow-ups with Chris and Shanann's correspondence continued. Friends and coworkers shared their knowledge of the couple's recent turmoil, and the situation began to smell fishier and fishier to the investigators. Chris's strange behavior during the investigation included an inability or unwillingness to show emotion. Although his beloved wife and daughters were missing, he was repeatedly self-absorbed, and he didn't engage the police with the typical frantic questioning that is characteristic of a concerned father. He also seemed nervous to some that knew him well, including co-worker Troy McCoy. He noticed Chris's actions on site at one of the oil fields, including his insistence on parking in a strange spot on the site and his fidgety stares out to a fresh mound of dirt somewhere near the site. He shared the misgivings he had about Chris's behavior with the authorities, and the others came forward sharing their stories about Chris and Shanann's recent troubles as well. One email that Chris sent out during the investigation shows him saying, quote, "I'm in," end quote, in response to an earlier conversation about joining a fantasy sports team. When Shanann's friends noticed this, it only drew them closer to the conclusion that Chris was behaving strangely, even inappropriately, for someone who should be worried about his family. Police discovered in their rounds of questioning the neighbors that one neighbor had a security camera with a view of Chris Watts' garage. Police went over the footage, finding a clip of Chris backing a small portion of his work truck into the garage on the morning of Shanann's disappearance. The strangest of the activity, according to the neighbors, is that Chris never could use the garage door in the morning for fear of incurring Shanann's anger by waking the children. Chris claims that he habitually brought his tools inside over the weekend to avoid thefts, but even with the garage door debacle aside, the neighbors confirmed with the authorities that Chris never backed his truck into the garage. Not only was it not a habit of his, but it was suggested as impractical, since Shanann's vehicle took up the space within the garage as it was. It was becoming clear to investigators that the whole story was not being shared, and that they needed to talk to Chris Watts. After the initial visit to the Watts residence, the police discovered the house in a different state. The beds were now made, and it seemed that Chris had been busy emptying the trash cans from each bedroom, along with some discarded bedsheets with fluid on them. Police also discovered a brand new marriage help book thrown away in the trash. This book, aimed at helping married couples live happier, more balanced lives together, was untouched and sealed within the package when investigators came upon it. This was considered odd, but one thing remains true to all who learned of it. A man who no longer had a wife would find no need in a book like this, especially one involved in foul play. The police approached Chris while at his home on Tuesday to see if he would agree to a polygraph. Chris, who insisted that he hadn't slept well, agreed to meet with them the following morning to perform the test. Once Chris showed to take the polygraph, there was a line of questioning that came before the test, some of which was used to establish a baseline of factual knowledge the police had attained so far. Police felt confident in beginning the test, and they asked three questions to determine Chris's possible involvement in the disappearance of his wife and kids. Question number one was, "Did you physically cause Shanann's disappearance?" Chris said no to this. Secondly, "Are you lying about the last time you saw Shanann?" Chris again said no. Finally, the police asked him, "Do you know where Shanann is now?" Chris said no, and the testing concluded. The test proctor analyzed the results and stated that Chris was not being truthful during the testing. The police doubts of Chris had been confirmed. Now they needed to know the extent of the deceit. The questioning was only going to get harder from here. It wasn't until after this that the story of what occurred that Monday morning became clear. Chris denied having deceived the police, and for a while kept up the charade, saying that he wasn't, quote, "trying to, like, cover things up," end quote. He said that he hoped for Shanann and his daughters to return home, as he didn't know what had happened to them. Soon, though, the investigators present asked him why it seemed like there were two different Chris personas present. Chris had this to say, quote, "I cheated on her. I'm not proud of it. She accused me of it. I denied it, and I feel horrible for it. Like, she was pregnant. I didn't hurt her. I cheated on her. I hurt her emotionally," end quote. Finally, the truth was trickling out. Chris revealed that he had nurtured a relationship with someone other than his wife, and that he'd fallen in love with her. He blamed his altered presence with Shanann on this fact, and without revealing Nikki's identity, he shared the actual truth about this involvement with her. His mention of the Rockies game to his friends and to the cops was a ruse. During that time, he was attending dinner with the unnamed mistress. He revealed that his 5 weeks alone had been spent with her, and that she was wonderful to him, even with the knowledge that he was still stuck in what he claimed a rocky marriage. After sharing with Chris that they, quote, knew all about his girlfriend, end quote, the investigators dove back into the most impending subject matter, the whereabouts of Shanann, Bella, and Celeste. I will be right back after this quick message.
It is in human nature to have extremely enjoyable feelings that make you feel guilty. Join me, your host, the one and only Father Sin, every week while I delve into the inner workings of the human mind in my own twisted and sinful way on The Sinful Show, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris swore to the investigators that he knew nothing of the sort, but that he would help in any way he could to help his family be found. Soon, piece by piece, the police started to ask about the strange facts of the case that may have implicated his involvement in the girls' disappearances. They mentioned the footage of his truck backing into the garage, to which Chris responded by saying he put nothing in there except his work tools. He claimed to the police that the girls and Shanann were still in the house when he left, and that he had nothing to do with their disappearance. The police asked him about his, quote, emotional discussion, end quote, with Shanann on the morning of her disappearance, finding it odd that he had yet to show any of this emotion and crying during the 3 days that his wife and kids had been missing. Chris, now sniffling, insisted that although he wasn't crying, he still loved his kids. Chris and the investigators met at an impasse, in which Chris found no other response to these many questions except, I didn't do anything, and I don't know. The police asked if something may have happened by accident, to which Chris responded, quote, I didn't do anything, end quote. He was then asked if Shanann did something to the kids, and Chris said, quote, I don't know, end quote, again and again. He met the investigators with frustration and ignorance. The police brought to Chris's attention other cases of parents acting on emotion and killing their children. Chris denied anything like this could have happened. After another round of questioning, Chris asked to see his father, and the police wrapped up their interview. Chris clearly knew something, but was unwilling to relent. It was time to try something else. After the post-polygraph questioning from police, Chris Watts met with his dad to tell a very different story from the one he'd provided the police before. He first began by telling his dad that he didn't want to protect her. He rambled a bit, finally telling Ronnie Watts that, quote, she hurt them, end quote, and that he subsequently hurt her. Ronnie asked Chris if the kids and Shanann left after this. Chris told his father that he did, in fact, kill Shanann. But why? How could a man who was once so in love with his wife, with his kids, with his life, ruin it by killing the woman who was carrying his unborn child? Well, according to Chris, he was left with no choice. According to him, Shanann had smothered both of their daughters in their sleep. Chris then told his dad that Shanann had first confronted Chris about his affair, and Chris said that he denied it. Chris spoke up once again about the separation, and he said that Shanann strangled the two girls in response to his infidelity. Chris told his father that he, quote, freaked out and did the same thing, quote, by strangling her, and that he took their bodies away, at a loss for what to do next. Here is Chris speaking with his father while in the interrogation room. I apologize if it is hard to hear.
I don't want to protect her. What? I don't want to protect her. You don't want to protect her. I don't know what else to say. She hurt him?
Yeah.
And then I killed her. What now? I got not her. You hurt her. Did they leave after that? Or what now? So she's already, she gives.
Chris finished saying that he killed Shanann and hid the bodies in the oil field, with Shanann in a shallow grave and his girls each in an oil tank. He made a show of telling the police and his father that he regretted his actions, and that what he witnessed was Shanann's performing an act of pure evil. He then marked the photo of the oil field he indicated and gave the information to the police. The police had already begun a drone investigation of the site and found evidence there that included a discarded bedsheet from the Watts home. With Chris's help, the investigators also discovered the bodies of Shanann, Bella, and Celeste. Shanann's body was buried near the operation site, and like Chris said, the two giant vats of oil and water housed the dead bodies of each of his little girls, covered in crude oil. After the news came out with information about his actions, Chris awaited trial in prison. While there, he eventually spoke with investigators, who hoped to learn about some additional claims to affairs from other random individuals. Chris had not been expecting the investigators to come, and they asked him whether he wanted to talk about what happened. Chris replied, "Definitely," and the questioning began. The police began by determining the nature of these other claimants, whom he denied ever knowing. He only admitted to the one affair, the one with Nikki. The police then began to try and understand the relationship that Chris had with Nikki. Chris obliged, sharing answers to every question
within his realm of knowledge, stating that he often tried to avoid reminders of his home life when he was with Nikki. Chris said that he now wished it had never gotten so intimate with Nikki, and that the relationship should have stayed at work. After revealing the extent of his closeness with Nikki over Shanann's time out of town, Chris began to answer questions about his relationship with Shanann, claiming that she was controlling. He began to list off instances at which many relationships might see signs of trouble, including disapproval from his parents and the attitude Shanann supposedly had toward his initial advances. Eventually, through the line of questioning at the prison, Chris came to answer questions he had answered before, in a very different way. Chris decided to take a plea deal, revealing the awful truth of that August morning. Chris and Shanann did in fact have a discussion that morning. Here is Judge Marcelo Kopkow delivering the sentence to Chris Watts.
So the court has considered the arguments made by the attorneys. The court has considered the statements made by the victims in this case. The court's going to find that the plea agreement is fair and reasonable under the circumstances. I want to acknowledge the Rusick family, as well as the Watts family, that showing mercy on Mr. Watts is understood. And I respect that decision to request that the district attorney not seek the death penalty in this case. And so the court is going to accept this plea bargain under the circumstances. Words that come to mind when I hear the evidence in this case are a senseless crime and the viciousness of the crime. And equally aggravating in this court's determination is the despicable act of disposing of the bodies in the manner in which they were done in this case. I've been a judicial officer now for starting my 17th year, and I could objectively say that this is perhaps the most inhumane and vicious crime that I have handled out of the thousands of cases that I have seen. And nothing less than a maximum sentence would be appropriate. And anything less than the maximum sentence would depreciate the seriousness of this offense. So the court is going to sentence Mr. Watts as follows. With regard to count number one, murder in the first degree as it relates to Shanann Watts, the court is going to sentence you, sir, to a life sentence in the Colorado Department of Corrections, followed, with no possibility of parole. And that is going to run consecutively to all but counts three and four. With regard to count two, as it relates to murder in the first degree with Bella, the court is going to sentence you to life in the Colorado Department of Corrections with no possibility of parole. With regard to count number three, the court is going to sentence you as it relates to Celeste to life in the Colorado Department of Corrections with no possibility of parole. With regard to counts four and five relating to Bella and Celeste as a different theory of first-degree murder, the court is going to sentence you to life in the Colorado Department of Corrections, and legally those sentences must run concurrently as a different theory of first-degree murder. Recognizing the unlawful termination of pregnancy for the unborn child that has been named Nico, the court absolutely believes that the maximum sentence of 48 years would be appropriate to run consecutive to the other charges. with an additional mandatory parole period of 3 years as set forth by statute. With regard to count number 7, as it relates to tampering with a deceased body, as well as counts 8 and 9, each a class 3 felony, the court is going to impose a maximum sentence of 12 years each for those counts to run consecutively to the other counts. The court is going to order that the statutory fees be paid and court costs. The court's going to grant the prosecution 91 days to file a notice of restitution, and that will be the sentence of the court.
Finally, after all the questioning and the attempts he made to avoid prison, investigators learned that it was Chris who did the killings. Only Chris. One after one. He killed his wife and 2 daughters, hiding the evidence of their deaths in the oil field, where he was scheduled to work that morning. Chris, for all the trouble trying to hide the crime, wound up confessing to bringing his family a fate much worse than any of his friends and family could have imagined. Those who take to trusting people often find reward in such relationships. Sometimes the people we trust are the people that get us through the day. Other times, they are just the people that save us in our most desperate times of need. With Chris's family, however, it was different. The woman he'd promised to love until he died, the children he provided for, and baby Nico, on its way into his life, all died at his hand. They trusted him. They needed him. He took them each to an early grave. Chris had turned his back on some of his own family when he left with Shanann years ago, saying that he didn't need them because he had her. Perhaps when he decided that he didn't need Shanann, he was turning his back on her in an even bigger way. Whatever the case, Chris Watts had broken the unspoken rule of fathers, a rule that states no father could ever hurt their children. Chris wondered aloud when recounting his deeds and the way he had killed his family. Quote, "Was I even a dad at one point? I don't know." End quote. He probably never will. Chris Watts is a devil we know. Thank you for listening to Devil We Know. This episode was written and researched by David Young. Produced by myself and Monkey Basement Productions. I would love to hear everyone's thoughts on this case. You can please go to my Facebook page, Devil We Know. I'm on Twitter at Devil We Know Pod, Instagram at Devil We Know Pod. It would be a big help to this podcast if you would go onto iTunes, give me a 5-star rating, and leave a nice review. I will shout all the reviews out on my next podcast. And until next week, this is Devil We Know. And I'll see you next Sunday with another episode of Devil We Know.